Jefferson County Board of Equalization versus Garviano. And again, I want to advise counsel that Justice Hobbs will be participating. He just couldn't be here this afternoon. So please, proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Eric Butler, registration number 29997. I represent the Jefferson County Board of Equalization. The issue presented in this case is whether the Board of Assessment Appeals is required to award costs to a taxpayer that receives an adjustment in the valuation of their property. Excuse me. The plain language of CRS 398109 provides that the BAA has discretion as to whether to award such costs. Further, to the extent that there is any ambiguity in the language of Section 109, Colorado tax policy, which favors actual and proportional valuation of properties, favors an interpretation of the statute which gives such discretion to the BAA. As to the language of the statute itself, there's really one sentence that's at issue. That sentence happens to be 160 words long, so perhaps it's no surprise we're here today. But if you boil that sentence down, its meaning is in fact plain. It requires the county treasurer to do three things. The first is to give an award, to refund the taxes that were overpaid. The second is to give interest on that overpayment of taxes. And the third is to give a refund of costs in such amount as may be fixed by the Board of Assessment Appeals. Now, that sentence contains both the mandatory word shall and the discretionary word may. Taxpayers have focused on the mandatory word shall, but that word applies to the county treasurer's obligations. There is no requirement anywhere in Section 109 that the BAA do anything. Rather, it's the discretionary word may that applies to the BAA. It's authorized but not required to award costs. And that difference becomes even clearer when you compare Section 109 to other statutes regarding costs. Take, for instance, CRS 13, 16, 104, and 105. Those are the basic cost statutes for civil lawsuits. They provide that the plaintiff or the defendant, as the case may be, shall have judgment to recover costs. Shall have judgment. That's clear, mandatory language, and it stands in stark contrast to the purely discretionary language of Section 109. The Court of Appeals error was in inserting a mandate into Section 109 where none exists in the plain language itself. If, however, you find that the language of Section 109 is ambiguous for any reason, then the court may look at the consequences of a particular construction of that statute. One of the fundamental tax policies in Colorado is that we want to arrive at the fair, accurate, and proportional valuation of each property, so that each property owner is paying their fair share of the tax burden. If you apply a mandatory costs reading to Section 109, it is going to frustrate that fundamental policy. The reason is that counties are going to be less likely to defend fair and actual valuations because they're faced with potentially a cost award that substantially outweighs the amount of money that they have invested in the matter. Even a minimal change in valuation could potentially result in a substantial award of costs.
Counsel, can I stop you there? And just, I get the sense that the main argument, I guess, is a policy argument that you will be reluctant or just won't go down this path because of the fear of costs. Is that kind of your argument?
I guess our main argument is the plain language.
Yeah, no, well, okay, the main argument you're making right now.
Yes.
Your main policy argument. And I guess I'm wondering how that circles back to the language in the sense that I guess how I read the Court of Appeals opinion was that you shall award costs or whatever, shall forthwith receive the appropriate refund together with a refund of interest and a refund of costs. Okay, so I think the Court of Appeals read that language as a mandatory shall, but then with the discretionary amount, correct? And I think the Court of Appeals actually says you can award zero, correct? So that's why I guess I'm wondering where the fear of costs comes in from, at least from the Court of Appeals reading, because they seem to have reserved the option of having zero costs.
Sure. Well, the Court of Appeals read that shall language, it seems to me, to apply to the BAA rather than the county treasurer. That said, it's correct that they expressly said, hey, that amount can be zero in an appropriate case. But what's concerning is that they also said that the award is mandatory. And in discussing what the basis might be to reduce costs or to determine the amount of costs, they cited to cases that deal with the general statutory cost awards. In that case, it was 1317202. Those cases really only deal with whether a cost is reasonable. For instance, was an appropriate amount of time spent on the matter? Was the rate that was billed appropriate? Not is this case even appropriate for a consideration of costs, which is a broader level of discretion, which I believe is inherent in the statute. The level of discretion described in the cases cited by the Court of Appeals is a lower level of discretion. It's the discretion that a court has when costs are mandatory.
Could you stay with that just a second?
Yes.
I'm not sure I understand what the difference in discretion is. How would we measure an abuse of discretion under your assessment here of an abuse of discretion for denying costs versus an abuse of discretion for granting zero costs?
Right. Well, you know, I think let's use this case as an example. Under the analysis that I think is laid out by the Court of Appeals, the BAA could say was an appropriate amount of time spent on this case by the appraiser? Was an appropriate rate charged by the appraiser? But they could not say, you know, this is not the sort of case where it's appropriate, where the parties are relatively close together in valuation, they proceed in good faith, we decide it's somewhere in the middle, it's a small amount at issue, a few hundred dollars, it's just not appropriate to award costs approaching $1,000 in such a case. They would not have that discretion, I think, under a mandatory cost provision like 1317202.
But why couldn't you just say in that case that the costs are zero? This is a close case. It's a small case. The costs are zero. I guess I'm trying to figure out what's the difference between those two.
I think the concern is that there's no precedent, at least that I see, in the case law regarding 1317202 or 1316104 and 105 for that kind of analysis. The analysis that I see is simply were the rates and the time expended reasonable? Not, this just isn't the kind of case that it's appropriate to award costs in, which I believe is the level of discretion that the court has here.
Is that all case law then, where you're finding these factors that would make it appropriate to one versus the other?
Case law is where I am finding an absence of factors that would allow in the mandatory cost provisions, going so far as to say this is simply not an appropriate case to award costs in. You don't see that sort of analysis, I have not, in the cases interpreting the other more general statutory provisions like 1316104 and 105.
So that's your fear, because if they weren't, if we didn't have that kind of a distinction, then you're perfectly happy with the way the Court of Appeals has phrased it. Is that right?
If the Court of Appeals interpretation meant an award of costs is optional, as in this is not an appropriate case, then we wouldn't have the same concern. The concern we have is based on the language in there that says it's mandatory. But you can adjust it to a reasonable level and citing the cases that deal with the mandatory cost provisions. 1317202. I think our fear founded on that line of reasoning is that it's going to handcuff the BAA in its discretion. It's going to have discretion, only the level of discretion that a court would have in a general civil lawsuit.
Yes, Mr. Butler, I wanted to take you back to your argument of the plain meaning, your first argument, in which you had said that shall, the mandatory word, I suppose, is referring to the treasurer. Mm-hmm. And I don't quite understand what you mean by that. It seems to me, although it is a lengthy sentence, that the subject that goes with shall forthwith receive is the appellant.
I think that's right. The subject of the sentence is the appellant. It's a passive sentence, I think, is the difficulty. It doesn't say from where they shall receive it, but it's pretty clear that it's talking about a refund. And the refund is...
Well, but then explain that to me, because it says, I mean, the operative language seems to me to be shall forthwith receive refund and a refund of costs, refund of taxes and a refund of costs.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow you are separating that and saying that shall forthwith receive is not also a reference to refund of costs?
No, it is also in reference to refund of costs.
All right.
But there is a restriction on costs. It's not all costs. It's a subset of costs. And that subset is such costs as may be fixed by the Board of Assessment Appeals. And again, there's nothing anywhere in the language of Section 109 that requires the BAA to fix those costs or to do anything for that matter. I want to quickly address why this case still matters. You've been presented with evidence of a change in the law, and it is in fact the case that Section 109 was amended this past legislative session. Starting August 11th, there will be a new rule, and the new rule will require both parties to pay their own costs in BAA proceedings. Excuse me. But that will only apply proceedings that are filed on or after August 11th. It won't apply to any of the remaining 2007 appeals, any of the 08, 09, even 2010 appeals that are filed before August 11th. There are going to be thousands of appeals that will be determined under the current rule over the next couple of years. It's literally tens of millions of dollars in taxes that are still at issue under this current version. So the case remains very important to the counties. With that, I will reserve the rest
of your... Tens of millions of dollars of taxes is really not the potential impact. It rather is the cost associated with proving that up one way or the other.
But to the extent that the counties are reluctant to defend that actual valuation, that amount of money, I think, really is in the mix. I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Mark Gerganoff on behalf of the respondent taxpayers, registration number 13240. It's the taxpayer's position that the ironically, the statute is not ambiguous. We reach, however, an opposite conclusion. We urge the court to conclude, as the Court of Appeals concluded, that the statute's a mandatory prevailing party statute. It's a two-way street. If the taxpayer loses, taxpayer pays the county's costs. If the taxpayer prevails, taxpayer gets its costs. The purpose behind that statute is to make the taxpayer whole and to achieve the constitutional mandate of finding actual value. The statute 398109 sub 1 says if upon appeal the appellant is sustained in whole or in part, then the appellant shall provide a copy of the order of the Board of Assessment Appeals to the county assessor. In the event that the appeal is pending in the district court, of course, the appellant will be obligated to present the judgment or order of the district court to the county assessor. And then upon presentation to the treasurer of that order or judgment, the appellate, as identified as the petitioner on the order or judgment, shall forthwith receive the appropriate refund of taxes and delinquent interest thereon, together with refund interest, and and I'm paraphrasing, a refund of costs. The word "and" is conjunctive. It is this it is a mandate on the part of the treasurer to pay the cost to the taxpayer, to the taxpayer, in the event the taxpayer achieves any modification in the valuation set by the county. The obligation, as Jeffco pointed out in its oral arguments, is on the treasurer, but you have to ask the next question, which Jeffco does not answer, and that's obligation to do what? It's to pay the interest, taxes, and costs. And it says the statute's very specific, including witness fees, which is, of course, what's an issue in this case. The opposite is also true. If the order is in favor of the county, the statute continues and says, then the county shall recover costs from the appellant in such amount as may be fixed by the Board of Assessment Appeals or the district court, as the case may be. The fact, I don't find any of this particularly interesting. The issue that you certified, I think, and the taxpayers argue, is resolved just by a review of the face of the statute. More interesting is what is meant by the words sustained in whole or in part. Is any de minimis reduction in the value achieved by the taxpayer satisfy that requirement and trigger the taxpayer's right to recover their costs? The taxpayers argued this afternoon that indeed that is the case. Any reduction in value achieved by the taxpayer shall result in the taxpayer's recovery of costs. You should reach that conclusion because from day one, back in 1902, when this cost statute was first enacted, the language read, but upon appeal, if the petitioner, the taxpayer that is, obtained judgment modifying the assessment, he may recover judgment for his costs, including his witness fees. And if judgment be for the county shall recover costs. That language remained unadulterated for over 50 years. In 1953, the same language existed, although the section number was changed. In 1963, the section number was changed again. The language was unchanged. In 1964, however, the section number and the language were changed. The word, the language of the statute tracked very closely to the language that we have today. The word "may," in referring to the taxpayer's right to costs, significantly was removed and replaced with the word "shall," which the parties agree is mandatory language. Also significantly, the word "modify" was retained. The word "modify" as referring to any change that the taxpayer may achieve in the valuation of the property that was in issue. It also, in 1964, provided that the court is to fix the amount. Prior to 1964, the statute was silent as to how the amount of the costs were to be established. So that was added.
Was it anything in any of those statutes, you talked about it saying that the court would fix the amount, does anything specify how the court should fix that amount? Is there a suggestion it must award actual costs?
No, there was no language. There's no guidance in any of the legislative history that I was able to find. In my brief, however, all the arguments of which I stand by, whether I make oral reference to them this afternoon or not, I lay out factors that are readily available. There's lots of precedent, not authority, there's lots of precedent that a district court, when it gets a property tax case, can rely on in determining whether a particular cost is awardable. The statute does say that witness fees, it expressly says witness fees, since 1902 has said that witness fees are recoverable. The taxpayers this afternoon are seeking to recover their witness fees, so that's very important. Any other factors are not covered by the statute. The Board of Assessment Appeals has no litany of factors or criteria. And that's really important because it's the as was alluded to earlier, and in the prior argument, in the case before ours this afternoon, the Board of Assessment Appeals, in determining the taxpayer's request for costs, summarily denied the request. The taxpayers weren't given any opportunity to evaluate their chances on review, as they might relate to an erroneous analysis, an erroneous determination of the facts, an erroneous application of the law. So the taxpayers filed a motion for detailed findings, believing it was their right, they had a due process right to be apprised of the basis for the Board of Assessment Appeals decision. And indeed, Rule 18 or 19, I believe it's 18, says specifically, the board's rule, that all its decisions shall be in writing and include findings and conclusions. Of course, the board didn't do that. The taxpayers filed their motion for detailed findings, and again, the Board of Assessment Appeals summarily denied the motion. The taxpayers went forward with no understanding as to what basis the Board of Assessment Appeals was relying in denying the taxpayers' request for costs. So this case really is as much about constitutional and statutory due process as it is the correct legal interpretation of 39.8109 sub 1. I would submit that at a minimum, you have to affirm the Court of Appeals to the extent it reversed the Board of Assessment Appeals and instructed the board to reconsider the taxpayers' motions.
Raise these constitutional arguments below?
I beg your pardon? Yes, I argued in the Court of Appeals that the Court of Appeals should, argued that the Board of Assessment Appeals abused its discretion, that 24.4105, I think it's sub 6 or 7, required the board to enter findings and conclusions, and it failed to do so, that failure was reversible error. The Court of Appeals agreed.
Well, I asked you if you asserted a constitutional claim.
Not specifically.
Okay.
I think that, however, that would be superfluous because the statutory due process is broad enough to include any constitutional due process rights that the taxpayers might have. There's a very important fact that the court shouldn't be misled about the taxpayer's position below. The taxpayers filed a petition asserting a value of $451,000 for their residence, the subject property in this case. After being put through the paces by Jefferson County, they hired their expert. The expert concluded, without wavering, that the value was $482,000. So at hearing, all the counties are asserting that our value, the taxpayer's value, was $451,000 below. In the proceedings below before the Board of Assessment Appeals, that is patently wrong, and court should not be misled by that. Volume 1, which is the transcript at pages 16 to 17, the taxpayer clearly uncontrovertedly asserts that the value of their property is $482,000. Volume 2, page 84, which is the board's order on the merits, finds conclusively, and this finding was not challenged by the county. On page 84, at the top of the page, volume 2, the board says, the petitioners are requesting a value of $482,000. Volume 2, page 104, of the record, which is Jefferson County's objection to the taxpayer's motion for order fixing costs. At the top, Jefferson County states very clearly, unambiguously, that the taxpayers are requesting a reduction of the value of their property to $482,000. Unless you have some questions, I can think of nothing further. This is
I have one just to clarify and see unless I misunderstood. So were you saying that any reduction that the taxpayers win entitles them to costs, and at least with regard to witness fees, you were saying that
correct,
entitles them to full reimbursement of witness fees?
The statute is mandatory. We are entitled to taxpayers, prevailing taxpayers, a taxpayer that achieves any modification of the county's valuation is entitled to costs in the amount fixed by the district court or the Board of Assessment Appeals, which may be zero, after considering the factors, reasonable factors, which the courts have adopted. Are the costs reasonable? Are the costs necessary in the district court? The court very well could award zero costs. What factors the Board of Assessment Appeals will apply, I don't know. They have no pronouncements. They've published no standards. They would have to be reasonable. We would urge, will urge the Board of Assessment Appeals to adopt factors that are reasonable given Colorado property tax laws. So in answer to your question, Judge Coates, just because we're claiming $962.50 in costs doesn't mean that it's our position here today that the Board of Assessment Appeals is obligated to award us $962. It may be some amount less than that. I think that only $350 is likely to be in dispute, and that's the cost of the taxpayer's expert's appraisal report. There's some dispute as to whether or not that is a cost that is awardable. The remaining
Why would that be disputable?
How could it be disputable?
Yeah.
In my opinion, no. The Bennett case.
Well, I understand your argument.
Well, Jefferson County has asserted that because the Board of Assessment Appeals, in its decision on the merits, commented that the taxpayer's expert witness report, the written report, was entitled to little weight, whatever that means. Jefferson County is going to argue.
Thank you.
There are two cases in Colorado, however, that rebut that. You don't go to issues of how much weight a particular piece of evidence was given before you determine whether or not that the costs associated with that evidence are recoverable. That's an issue, happily, for another day. In all seriousness, the taxpayers ask that you affirm the Court of Appeals and indeed award the taxpayer their costs for that were incurred in this proceeding today. Thank you very much for your attention.
Well, the taxpayers cited to some old case, old legislation from the 1940s and 1960s. We didn't brief that. It was submitted in supplemental authorities, and I guess my position is you shouldn't take a look at it. But bottom line, the law changed substantially. It is now clearly discretionary. We don't disagree with the taxpayers that if there is even a minor change under the statute, the switch flips, and at least the discretion to award costs to the county goes away. It becomes a matter of the discretion to award costs to the taxpayers. That's the problem here. That's the concern from a policy perspective for the counties. Counties, after all, are only going to collect a fraction of these taxes. The rest goes to schools and other taxing authorities, and it may just not be worth the risk to go forward without at least undervaluing that property before we move forward. And that's not fair to the other taxpayers. This case isn't about due process. It's not about findings by the court. Those are not issues that were appealed. There's a single issue before you. It's the interpretation of this statute. And, the $900 in this case really isn't the concern. It's the next 2,000 cases that we're concerned about. Thank you.
On behalf of the court, I thank both counsel for your arguments. The case stands submitted.